At the Burbank.
The House Committee on Education will come to order. Welcome to the Oregon House. There are a lot of you here today. I know that many people are here for House Bill 2754, and in order to get expeditiously through our agenda, we're going to take two other bills first that will get through more quickly on the agenda. And so before I do that, if you have a cell phone with you, would you please take it out of your purse or your wallet or your pocket? Don't just turn it to vibrate. Turn it all the way off. It interferes with the recording system, and I am confident that there are people listening online, and we want to make sure that they have a good audio, and you can help that happen by turning your phone off. So I would like to open a public hearing on HCR 5. Representative Garrard. Welcome to the House Education Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know you have a full crowd not here to hear me, so I'll make this as brief as possible. I'm Bill Garrard, State Representative, District 56, Klamath Falls. We like to honor achievement in this legislative body, and that's what House Concurrent Resolution 5 is all about. It's about achievement. Honoring the achievements of Oregon Tech head basketball coach Danny Miles. Let me tell you why Coach Miles is someone very, very special, not only to Klamath Falls, but to the state of Oregon, and now leaving his footprint on the national scene. His teams are tied for 6th in the nation on the all-time list of winning coaches in America. He's tied with Kentucky's Adolph Rupp with 876 basketball wins. He's only 3 behind Dean Smith of North Carolina. In his 38 years as head coach of Oregon Tech, his teams have posted 876 wins and 343 losses. 2 National Association of Intercollegiate Athletic Division championships. The Owls were ranked number 1 in the nation this year. He has been inducted into the NAIA Hall of Fame in 2001 and the Oregon Sports Hall of Fame in 1996. He was named National Basketball Coach of the Year in 2004 and 2008, and he was NAIA National Coach of Character in 2008. His teams, he's had 4 teams in the Final Four in the nation, 6 teams in the Final Eight, 12 teams in the Sweet 16, and 2 national championships. You have one amendment, and that is we can't keep up with his victories. So you have a very short amendment changing 11 teams in the Sweet 16 to 12, as he again qualified for a national championship this year in the national tournament. We're very proud of Danny Miles, and it's hard keeping up with this guy because he still has a long way to go. I ask for your yes vote on House Concurrent Resolution 5, and thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator.
Thank you, Chair Gelser and committee members. For the record, my name is Doug Whitsitt. I represent Senate District 28. As head coach of OIT men's basketball team, Danny Miles' teams have won 7 out of 10 games they've played for the last 4 decades. As a coach, he ranks number 6 in all-time victories. To my knowledge, no records are kept on the other accomplishment, but it is also possible that Coach Miles has coached more collegiate academic All-Americans than any other coach in American history. That's no accident. Coach Miles recruits good athletes who have good academic records. From the very first day of practice, Coach Miles makes it clear to his players that the reason they're attending OIT is to get an education, and OIT provides very good education. If his players do not perform in the classroom, they're not allowed to perform on court. They do not come from all over the globe to play at OIT because of the nightlife in Klamath Falls. They come to play for one of the very best coaches in the world. Coach Miles has been offered many opportunities to leave OIT at multiples of what he earns coaching there at OIT. He's chosen to stay at OIT because that's his university. He stays in Klamath Falls because it's his hometown. I've never met a finer coach, a better developer of athletic and academic talent, and certainly I've never met a better all-around man, just a good gentleman than Danny Miles. I would really hope that you could see to it to move this forward today. Thank you.
Thank you both very much. Is there anyone else that would like to be heard on HCR 5? Yes, please.
Chair Yeltsin, honorable members of the committee, for the record, my name is Valerie Lane, and I'm Chief of Staff of Oregon Institute of Technology. And I want you all to understand that I'm here on my vacation this week so that I can represent our community, not just our institution. Danny Miles is a man who has really reached out to the entire state of Oregon. It's very hard to be a child growing up in Southern Oregon and not attend his summer basketball camps. And it doesn't matter if you're skilled enough at dribbling or shooting a layup. What matters is he teaches character. Children come from throughout the state to learn from this man and from his coaching staff, his players. They all develop the importance of character while they're there. They treat each other well, and they know that when they leave camp, they'll have more than just Danny Miles' handshake. They will have a true friend and an adult who positively models for them appropriate interactions. And that's why in 2 weeks he will receive the National Coach of Character Award from the NAIA. Danny Miles is also a man who travels throughout Pacific Northwest speaking on what it is to be a champion. A champion does not rely on wins and losses. A champion relies on himself, to give of himself, and to always look out for their fellow man. And so I ask you today to please put forward this concurrent resolution to honor this man. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions before we close this public hearing? Thank you. Thank you all very much for coming. And I will close the public hearing on HCR 5. And I'm going to open a public hearing on HCR 6. Representative Holvey and Senator Walker, please. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I should offer the Senator to go first, or if she would like her...
Last time we were together, you went first, so I'll go first. We play well together. thank you. I'm State Senator Vicki Walker, District 7, and Representative Holvey and I are here representing the delegation from Lane County, here to celebrate and congratulate Dave Frohnmayer, who's not dead yet, which is a good thing. but he is moving on to other pursuits, and we are going to miss him tremendously. And while I've met the new president of the university, incoming president, I've met his wife, and received an email from the new incoming president. I have to tell you that my experience with Dave Frohnmayer has been tremendous. I actually met Dave when I was a student at the University of Oregon doing my undergraduate work. I was supposed to go to law school, and so I worked in the law school for my work-study program to help pay my way through school. I ended up not going to law school. I became a court reporter instead, which kept me in the legal field, but I met Dave while he was an instructor, a professor at the University of Oregon School of Law. And so it was quite thrilling to interact with him later as a legislator. Dave Frohnmayer has just done tremendous things, and Representative Holvey's going to touch on some of those. I think for me what is really fun is that he went before the United States Supreme Court 7 times and won 6 of those. That's a pretty good record. I would say that's almost even better than the Ducks. But, you know, that's a pretty awesome thing to go before the United States Supreme Court. And if you've never been to the court, if you go to Washington, D.C., I encourage you to go and look at this marvelous piece of architecture and what it means to Oregon and the states around the country who look to the Supreme Court to decide issues, sometimes not the way we wish, but they are an incredible group of individuals. And for Dave Frohnmayer to argue those cases has been awesome. And in fact, he has the best record of any attorney general in the United States of winning cases before the U.S. Supreme Court. I also want to mention that Dave has spent a lot of time. We all know about fundraising. We've all had to fundraise to get here. We won't talk about that, but we all know what fundraising is. Well, it's on a completely different level when you're doing it for a major university, and it's tough when your university's not doing very well, and it's easier when the university is doing well, but it's never easy. No one likes to fundraise, but I will tell you that Dave Frohnmayer, in his role as president of the University of Oregon, has just completed the largest philanthropic campaign in state history, raising more than $852 million for our university, my alma mater, the University of Oregon, one of the seven universities in our system. I am thrilled that he is leaving such a wonderful legacy for the new incoming president, whose last name I'm learning to pronounce, La Riviere. I believe that is correct. But I want people to remember what Dave has contributed to our state and our campus and to our community. Him and his wife have been incredible partners, and they've had some tragedy in their life that they have turned around and done something extremely positive with it. And I've interacted with several of their children and in different ways, and they are incredible children, a wonderful family, and this is just a high honor to honor the university president, Dave Frohnmayer. And I'll turn it over to Representative Holvey, who has wonderful things to say as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Gelser and committee members for hearing HCR 6. I think Senator Walker has really touched on some great highlights. You know, I just wanted to add that, you know, Dave Frohnmayer's whole life has been as a public servant, it seems like, for my lifetime anyway, and has just been an extraordinary person for the state of Oregon as well. As well as being Attorney General of the State of Oregon, he's been a member of the Oregon Legislature and also served as the Dean of the University of Oregon Law School. And he's been just a very eager and very committed partner in our community and in our economy. It's an extraordinary piece of our economy in not just Lane County, but in the state of Oregon. The partnerships that he's built with some of the donated monies, with industry and with education, and today is just really extraordinary. The Locase Center, you know, partnering with many industries, Intel, Genentech, and Vitrogen, has just really been a huge bonus for our economy. And I think people really miss a lot of the educational opportunities that that they have really thrived on. We hear a lot about sports, but the real bulk of the philanthropic work has really gone to education and to bolstering our economy. So I just want to urge the committee to send this resolution to the floor with a favorable position. Thank you very much.
Thank you both very much.
Madam Chair, I might pause and just state one last thing for the record, because I want us to all remember that we live on in perpetuity as legislators. Our words live on. And I will tell you that in the 10 years I've been here, I do a lot of research. I'm kind of prone to doing that sort of thing. And I've gone to the archives and I've pulled out records, and I have found Dave Frohnmayer's name on many pieces of legislation I have reviewed. One of them, the Oregon Public Records Law, which was a tremendous achievement during the Watergate era in the 1970s. So you will live on in history long after you've finished what you're doing here, and long after your children have grown and had other children. So do remember that what we say on the record today will be read by many millions tomorrow. So thank you.
Thank you both very much. Next we have George Pernsteiner. And colleagues, I want to note for the record our receipt of a letter from President Ed Ray from Oregon State University joining in the congratulations of Dave Frohnmayer. Welcome, Chancellor.
Thank you, Chair Gelser, members of the committee. For the record, my name is George Pernsteiner. I'm the Chancellor of the Oregon University System. And I want to thank you for the opportunity for me to brag about my senior president. Talking about a man who has transformed a strong and beloved institution, and he's done it deftly, but he's done it irretrievably. The University of Oregon in 2009 is not the same institution as it was in 1994. It is stronger, it is better respected in academic circles, in business circles, in political circles, in community circles, in Oregon, throughout the United States, and actually throughout the world. Dave Frohnmayer had a lot to do with that. But he also led the largest percentage increase in funded research of any university in the state over that same period of time. The University of Oregon's faculty this year will conduct more than $110 million worth of funded research, about 2.5 times the number that was there in 1994. You have heard Senator Walker talk about the successful capital campaign the university just concluded, a capital campaign that focused on academic excellence in terms of faculty chairs, focused on affordability in terms of scholarships for students, focused on building the infrastructure of the university in terms of buildings, and raised more than $850 million. But it was the second capital campaign. The first one, also launched by President Frohnmayer, was in its time the most successful fundraising effort in Oregon history. So he's done it twice. During his tenure, he has added new major academic buildings in science, law, music, education, art, and business. Built the Living Learning Center, which was the first major new residential facility at the university in well over 40 years, as well as constructing numerous athletic facilities. But I think most important of all, there will be this summer 65,000 people all over the world, most of them here in Oregon, who can look up at the diploma on their walls and see Dave Frohnmayer's signature, attesting to the fact that the University of Oregon and Dave Frohnmayer have changed their lives forever. So I request that you approve this House concurrent resolution honoring President and soon-to-be Professor Dave Frohnmayer.
Thank you, Chancellor.
Thank you.
Colleagues, I'm going to close the public hearing on HCR 6. I'm going to open a work session on HCR 6. Is there a motion?
Yes, Madam Chair. It's with great pride that I move HCR 6 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Representative Dimbrough moves HCR 6 to the floor with a do adopt recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Chair Gelser. I would just like to say, as a graduate of the University of Oregon, that it's significant, the changes that Dave Frohnmayer made to campus. It's quite obvious. And in fact, I think the word is that the institution is pretty much a private institution, and that the state only supports them by the tune of about 16%. Now, my numbers could be wrong, but that's the effort that has been accomplished by private fundraising. And I've always been grateful for my degree from the University of Oregon.
Thank you very much. Any further discussion? Is there any objection to HCR 6? Seeing none, it is adopted, and Representative Holdy will carry this bill on the floor. I'll close the work session on HCR 6 and open a work session on HCR 5.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the -1 amendment to HCR 5, which is dated 3-18-09.
Representative Dimbrough moves to adopt the -1 amendment dated 3-18-09. And again, you'll remember this is the amendment that updates the accomplishments of the good coach. Is there any discussion?
Hey.
Representative Groveland.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just hopeful, and I didn't get to ask the question, that they're not still in the tournament. And this next week it'll be 8, and then... We have to change the other one. It's the week before, but I assume that they're done.
It is my understanding that the tournament is complete.
Thank you. Is there further discussion?
Yeah.
Is there any objection to the -1 amendment? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Dimbrough.
Yes, Madam Chair. I move HCR 5 as amended to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Representative Dimbrough moves HCR 5 as amended to the floor with a do adopt recommendation. Is there any discussion? No. Is there any objection? Seeing none, the motion passes and the memorial is adopted. And I will close the work session on HCR 6. And Representative Garrard will carry that bill. So I'm closing the work session on HCR 6. and opening a public hearing on House Bill 2754. And before Kevin gives the overview of the bill, I just wanted to extend a special welcome to all of the children that are in the room today. For some of you, I'm sure that this is your first chance to visit the Capitol, and I hope you get a chance to wander around the building and look at the chambers, and it's really wonderful to have children in the room for a hearing of the House Education Committee. So thanks for taking part of your day to spend with us. Kevin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, before you is House Bill 2754. Representative Wiggert's here, who can do a much better job at explaining this than I can, but I will just touch on a very couple of quick points. This will create the Rose Friedman Educational Opportunity Tax Act. The measure itself defines the educational expenses as well as eligible students. The measure allows taxpayer parents of an eligible student a personal income tax credit for educational expenses actually paid or incurred during the tax year. The amount of the tax credit is $1,000 multiplied by the number of students. There's also a tax credit for contributions to a qualified scholarship granting organization. There's provisions that allow for a tax credit as to that as well. This does prohibit tax credit from exceeding the tax liability of the taxpayer and allows the tax credit to be carried forward for a maximum of 3 years if it's not utilized over the course. It also provides rulemaking authority to the Department of Revenue and would take effect January 1st, 2010.
Thank you. And before we move on, the good representative pointed out that I closed the work session on HCR 6 twice. So I'd like to close the work session on HCR 5 also. Okay, now we're back in public hearing. Representative Wingard, Christine Martin, and Eric Fruits, please. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am one of the last members of the House to contract the flu, and so I am doing my part to fight it off. I would not have come today except for the hearing on this bill, which nothing could have prevented me from being here today for this hearing. I have with me Christina Martin from Cascade Policy Institute and Eric Fruits, who is an economist. So he has both hands. And we know we're all looking for an economist with only one hand, but he has both. You know that joke, right? On the one hand versus the other. Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. And members of Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the Education Committee for making time to hear the voices of the Oregon parents and children asking us.
And Representative Winger, did you introduce yourself to the record?
I did not.
Would you please?
My name is Matt Winger, and I'm representative from House District 26. I'll start again. Thanks for making time to hear the voices of the Oregon parents and children asking us, the legislature, to create more educational opportunities for them. I thank you for listening to them. Bear in mind that the people here today represent a tiny fraction of the children who need our help. By simply believing in the power of choice, we can improve the lives of tens of thousands of children in Oregon. And House Bill 2754 is the door to their brighter future. HB 2754 creates the Rose Friedman Educational Opportunity Tax Credits. This legislation would create two tax credits. First is the Oregon Family Education Tax Credit, a personal tax credit of $1,000 per child for any educational expenses. So for public school parents, this would offset the cost of supplies, any private tutoring that they contracted for, including the Sylvan Learning Center, and et cetera. Private school parents could use this to offset the cost of tuition. Obviously, it wouldn't offset tuition completely. For some low-income families and middle to low-income families, this tax credit would make the difference in their ability to afford tuition, which may be just out of reach for them, even though they desire to do it. And for homeschool parents, this would help offset the cost of supplies or technology for the choice that they are making. There is a hidden cost to our public education system. Many public school parents incur costs in addition to the free public education that their children are receiving. And when there are costs associated with supplies or even tutoring and things like that, those costs are disproportionately borne by low-income parents in our public education system. The second credit is the Opportunity Scholarship Tax Credit, a tax credit for donations made to a tuition scholarship organization that gives scholarships to low-income students or students with disabilities. In a moment, you're going to hear from one such scholarship organization and what they have achieved on a limited basis for low-income families. Opportunity scholarships are limited to every Oregon taxpayer can give up to $1,000 to a tuition-granting scholarship organization. Oregon businesses can give up to $10,000, but they get only a 75% credit on the final $8,000. The 75% business tax credit has the potential to produce millions of new private sector dollars for the education of tens of thousands of low-income and disabled students in Oregon. Iowa and Georgia allow individual tax credits for scholarship donations. Arizona, Florida, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, and Georgia have a corporate tax credit program. Colleagues, House Bill 2754 will help every family in Oregon that is spending money to educate our future citizens. House Bill 2754 will ensure that our most vulnerable children in Oregon get the high-quality education that they deserve. And House Bill 2754 will generate millions of new dollars for the education of Oregon's children from Oregon corporations. Expanding school options for parents and students is the civil rights issue of the 21st century. Unfortunately, I can't say that Oregon is a leader in the school reform movement. We've been slow to embrace a number of policies that have unleashed the creativity and passion of educators in other states. I hope you will listen to the families that testify today. Really listen to them about what legislation like this could do for their children. Watching the change in a child's attitude when they are finally matched up with an educational experience that works best for them is truly an awesome experience. They come alive, and their passion for learning is reignited right before your eyes. And once again, the parents can see a bright future for their child. A number of parents in this room can tell stories like that. It's been my honor over the last few years to hear hundreds of these types of stories. Expanding school options for students is now my full-time job. It's become my passion. I hope you will join me by helping us pass House Bill 2754. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Christine.
Chair Gelser, members of the committee, my name is Christina Martin. I am a policy analyst and project director with Cascade Policy Institute and the Oregon Education Tax Credit Coalition. I'm here today to ask you to support HB 2754. This bill will improve the average Oregon child's educational opportunities and by empowering families to choose the best education for their children. Many parents would be better able to afford private school tuition, tutoring, supplies for homeschooling, and that sort of thing. Many parents right now wish that they had a better opportunity for education. A recent public poll of likely Oregon voters found that 9 out of 10 voters would prefer an option other than their local public school, and 44% of them would prefer private school. One in 10 students currently attend something other than public school, so you can see there's a huge disparity between the two. There's a lot of people who would like to be in private school or charter school or homeschool, and they don't have that option right now because they can't afford it. This scholarship program and the individual tax credit program would enable many families to be able to do that. Now, I'm sure you're all concerned about the budget. I know that Oregon has a budget issue right now. But this tax credit is unique in that it actually has the potential of saving Oregon money. How would that work? Well, I'll give you the short version. I'll leave that to the economist, Dr. Fruits. But the short version of the explanation is basically that the average private school tuition is actually less than what we here in Oregon spend on students in the public system. So the average private school tuition is $7,200. It's considerably less for K through 8 education. And there are many cheap options for high school as well. You can very easily see, I think. Oh, well, and Oregon actually spends more than $10,000. Well, if you combine all sources of revenue, spending federal and state and local, we spend more than $10,000 per student. So you can see that $1,000 goes a long ways towards a private education, and that if you can take one child who wants to be in, say, private school, and they transfer from public school into private school, then you give them a $1,000 tax credit, well, to their parents, and you know, you'd save roughly $9,000 for the state. So I think it's pretty obvious how it would be possible to save money. Let's see. Other states who have similar laws have actually found that they've saved money. So Representative Wingard mentioned Florida has a scholarship program for corporations to donate to. They donate to scholarship programs and they get a tax credit. And they found that for every dollar that the state gave in a tax credit to these corporations, they actually saved $1.49. Arizona has an individual tax credit program, and they found that from 1999 to 2006, they saved $18 million in state money. So this bill could actually save Oregon money. This bill could also help reduce the need for costly expansion. I've spoken with many families who have expressed that during this recession they're having a difficult time paying for private school. And so they're concerned that they're going to have to put their child back into public school. That will put a strain on the schools. If we adopt the system, that could help families stay where they are in the system that suits them and reduce the strain on the government. So, attached to my testimony, I think the committee assistant has handed it out to you, I'm not sure. There's a big packet there that it's a list of all the Oregon Education Tax Credit Coalition members, and a lot of them have stories in there that they share. And there's over 600 people on that list, and a number of stories. So I would encourage you to read those later and when you're considering this bill. And Chair Gelser, members of the committee, I'm asking you to allow more Oregonians to make the power to make choices for themselves. Parents know their children's needs best. Please empower them to make those decisions for themselves.
Thank you very much. Mr. Fritz.
Madam Chair and committee members, thank you for inviting me here today. I won't spend too much time. One of the things I've learned from being at the university level is that the sure way to ruin a party is to invite an economist. So I'll try to just cover the basics here.
I guess it has to be told by an economist.
Well, I've said it a million times. It's the delivery. My name's Eric Fritz. I'm the president of Economics International Corporation, and I'm also an adjunct professor at Portland State University, where I've taught courses in state and local public finance. I've been engaged in a number of projects for state and private entities to try to evaluate the impacts of different policies. Probably the highlight of that would be my analysis of the PERS reforms, which ended up being heard by the Oregon Supreme Court. The state economist has then adopted those, my conclusions, and incorporated those into his economic forecast for the state and for state revenues. In this case, for this matter, on House Bill 2754, I was hired by Cascade Policy Institute to evaluate the fiscal impacts of the bill. And I should let you know that I really don't have any skin in the game. I have three children, two of which go to public school. One of them is too young for that. But I'm also a den leader at a school at a Catholic private school. So about half my den members are private school students. Some of them are worried that they won't be able to continue their private school education because of the downturn in the economy. But that's just his background to let you know that I really, I don't want you to think that I'm trying to advocate one way or the other for this bill. What I try to do is perform an objective analysis of what the fiscal impacts or potential fiscal impacts of this bill would be. You should have circulating a copy of my report. And as I said before, economics can get a little dry and boring. That lays out my methodology. So what I will do today is just simply give you a summary of my conclusions, and feel free to ask me any questions you have regarding the approach I took. One of the things I think you might find useful in there actually has absolutely nothing to do with economics, and it's a summary of nine states that have tax credit programs, either for scholarship organizations or as tax credits for students. And one of the things you'll find is kind of surprising among those nine states is you can't really assign a stereotype to those states. Some states, for example, as Arizona, probably have a reputation for being fairly conservative and Republican, and other states, such as Minnesota. Minnesota is perhaps most surprised, and they have a 45-year history of doing these tax credits, and I don't think you'd ever consider them to be a Republican stronghold. And so I thought that was kind of surprising that you have a variety of states, a variety of demographics in those states that have adopted these tax credit programs, and they all seem to be fairly successful. For this project, what I did was, let me back up. One of the other things you'll notice in those programs is that they're all different. They're all wildly different in terms of what sort of credits are you're allowed to take, who's allowed to take them, and so forth. And so it's really it's challenging to try to draw a stereotype and say, here's what would happen if we applied it to Oregon. And so what I tried to do was what I call a break-even analysis under some hypothetical levels of participation in the tax credit program. And what I mean by break-even is what Christina talked about earlier, is that on average, the cost of educating a student in the public school system in Oregon is about $2,000 more than private school tuition. And so to the extent that you can draw students out of the public school system and into the private system, you can do two things with that money. The state can either reduce total public school expenditures. In other words, as you take students away, you don't have to spend that money on students, although in some conversations I've had, I know the state wouldn't want to do that. They wouldn't want to reduce public school expenditures. Instead, though, what that does then is it increases the per student expenditures for the students who are remaining in the school system. So now I'll talk about the two programs. As has been mentioned before, the first one is the Opportunity Scholarship Tax Credit, and that's the one for it's a tax credit for donations made to a scholarship organization that gives scholarships to low-income students or students with disabilities. And I think that may be key in trying to talk about the impact. So these aren't going to be scholarships to everyone, and so you don't necessarily have to worry about a huge amount of tax dollars being siphoned off into the public sector, because it's going to be limited to low-income students and to students with disabilities. And the report describes how many students could qualify for that. That doesn't necessarily mean that they would take it. What I found is that the Opportunity Scholarship Tax Credit would require a relatively small shift in the number of students to private schools for the tax credit to pay for itself. I found that less than 10% of the eligible students would have to shift out of from the public school system into the private school system for that to pay for itself. And so that sounds, to me, that's as an economist and someone who's looked at state and local public finance, I think that's a reasonable number. It's not a wildly optimistic, and I certainly don't think it's a blue sky number. I think given these numbers, it could be reasonable to expect that 10% of the students who are eligible would participate. Another thing that's kind of key and that's been kind of missing from the discussions is, as the language is written in the bill, these tax credits would be exempt from kicker calculations. So in other words, if you take that credit to reduce your tax bill, that money is essentially a donation. It should be considered a donation. You won't be able to get that back in the form of a kicker. So it's a nice way of what I would call a ratchet effect, where you can ensure that money is going to be there. That also frees up some more revenues for the state of Oregon. The second tax credit is the Oregon Family Education Tax Credit, and it's a lot different in the sense that anyone who has a student can qualify for it. For people like me who have kids in public school and I spend money sending my kids on field trips, buying supplies for the classroom, I do that already. The tax credit would represent a windfall for people like me. But then offsetting that is the fact that with the tax credit, it then would help reduce the total expenditures on private schools. And what we found is that for every 10% Every 10% decrease in private school tuition, and you decrease that tuition by having the tax credit, for every 10% decrease, you'd have an about 11% increase in public school, in private school enrollment. And so you do get some bang for your buck. I found that you know, if you had a sufficient number of students who did transfer to private schools, it would free up anywhere between $90 per student to $730 per student for the students who remain in the public school system. I would have to tell you right now that I think that the 730 number is a bit ambitious. I think the $90, anywhere between, say, $90 to $120 per student additional money being freed up is probably a reasonable number. And like I said, I didn't want to take too much of your time. I'll give that to my summary. If you have any questions or comments, I'll take them.
Thank you very much. And as is our custom in this committee, we're going to let full panels testify before asking questions for all of them. And as we get started with your questions, as we all budget our time, we have nine more panels of people that wish to speak to us today on this bill. So are there any questions for this panel from the committee? Representative Denbro.
Actually, Representative Ben Orman had her hand up first.
Well, Dr. Fruits, thank you, Chair Gelser. Dr. Fruits, one of the questions I have is that in the calculations of cost per child, where the kids with disabilities fit into this picture?
Well, I looked at the average cost per child, and what that does is that includes, kids with disabilities are in there. They're in there as an average. I didn't pull out kids with disabilities separately. Also, I included ESD expenditures, which covers some disabilities, for example, ADD and that sort of those sorts of accommodations. But I didn't. The data is really not there to calculate the additional cost per student with disabilities, because as you know, different disabilities have different costs attached to them.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Harker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. School for the blind costs, school for the deaf costs, are they in there?
If they are part of public school expenditures, they are. I pulled the data off of the Oregon Department of Education database.
Okay, thanks. Because obviously there are extremely high costs per student at some institutions, and you've apparently included those in the averaging.
Yes, I included every school that was in that database.
Okay, great. And on the private school side, follow up.
But I would make a clarification, just because I've spent some time lately paying attention to the school for the blind and school for the deaf, and that if you remember the numbers we've looked at for each of those, and it has the other funds total, that's where the state school funds dollars go in there. The $8.5 million allocation that we make to the school for the blind would not be part of this. That legislative allocation is on top of what would be in this database. So those would be separate.
Okay.
Follow up.
It would be very helpful to have the numbers that you've used in putting these things together for us to look at. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Because on the private school side, I don't know the breadth of schools that are being considered there. I know that the dollar amount that was thrown out, I think by Christina, of the average tuition at a private school is way below any private school that I looked at for my kids and couldn't afford to send them to. All right. But
no, I understand. And I know you just got the report, but you'll notice that there's probably an obnoxious number of footnotes in here. So I listed all my sources I use, but if you or your staff want me to forward on the actual numbers I use, I'd be willing to do that too, so they don't have to go digging around.
That would be helpful. Thanks. And sure. One last question. I think you said in the range of monies that would be freed up per student on average, you felt comfortable with $70 to $90 range. Did I hear that correctly?
Yeah, for the second tax credit. One of the things I didn't do, I think it would have been, it would have, A, been very complicated, and also, B, probably would have given you a false sense of precision. One of the things I didn't do was combine both tax credits together. So I really couldn't tell you right now what would happen if both tax credits were combined. What I wanted to do is make it somewhat separate so you can look at them individually and evaluate it that way.
Your number was 90 to 150, wasn't it?
Roughly 90 to 150 was what I said would be reasonable. Would be freed up under that second
freed program. Up per student remaining in public school.
Right, and that's as you shift students from private school.
Mm-hmm.
Keep the total expenditures the same, but now you have fewer students that you're spending that on, so that would provide greater expenditures per student on the ones that are remaining in the public school system.
In essence, though, simultaneously withdrawing $1,000 per student from the tax base, because everybody, a very high percentage of people, are going to claim this $1,000 deduction for every kid in their house.
Well, I think you would have a relatively high participation rate. One of the things I discovered, though, was that the most popular tax credit is the personal exemption tax credit, and only 90% of that is taken. You would think that 100%, but some people don't actually have the income to take that full credit. I think there's, for a lot of people, there's an administrative side of taking tax credits, that they'd have to save those receipts, and so that's probably going to limit the extent to which the tax credit is taken. What I did in my analysis is I assumed that 80% of public school students would take that credit, and then what you'll see in the report, I didn't guess what the amount of credit would be, but I said, okay, hypothetically, what if everyone took on average $100, $200, I think $507.50. So I did it more as kind of a hypothetical number rather than try to say this is what it's going to be, because I don't think it'd be fair to give you that sort of false precision.
And I wanted to follow up a little bit on Representative Van Orman's question in terms of special needs students, because I noticed when you came to the total spending per student to do that calculation, it was that average. Though a lot of those funds, whether they be from the ESD or IDEA funds or English as a Second Language funds, would I be wrong to assume that many of those kids would not be the kids that would be moving to private schools, because in fact most private schools will not accept them?
Well, and then there's also private schools that specialize in that. For example, in the Portland area, there's a private school for the deaf, and so forth. And one of the things, too, in that first tax credit, the one for the scholarship organizations, it's actually targeted at low income and students with disabilities. And in the legislation, if I recall correctly, the income limit is different. So I think you can be, two times the poverty level to claim the credit if you have a student with a disability. So the idea, the objective is to try as much as possible to divert those high-cost students from the public school system into the private school system to the extent that there's space available.
So do you just follow up? Do you have a sense across the state of Oregon in the private school community what number of schools might be accepting students with mental retardation or students with autism into private school settings? I'm aware of that single school for the deaf in Portland, but I can't off the top of my head think of a single other school that would accept a child with Down syndrome or cerebral palsy.
Yeah, I don't know offhand, and that sort of information, at least from what I was looking at, was pretty difficult to get. I was looking at state-level information that was provided by either on the State of Oregon's website or to the U.S. Department of Education, the National Center for Education Statistics. It doesn't break out into that fine a detail what you're looking for.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I'd just add two things. There's a continuum, obviously, of disabilities, but I think in general, all the children that are in the category of having the disability tend to be higher cost, so they're on the scale up. So you have many students who may be diagnosed as ADHD or have some what we might consider, less severe disability than, say, severe retardation. And you do have schools that will cater to them, and I have spoken to parents who feel that the private school that they found, addressed the disability with their child in a way that they weren't getting somewhere else. The other thing I would add to that is that the very nature of this program creates the opportunity for schools to begin and to service and to reach out to those categories of children as well. So some of what we don't know is what we don't know. When you create the opportunity for those scholarships to be there for people who cannot currently afford it, I'm always surprised at what happens when there's money involved. People will find all sorts of creative ways to offer educational opportunities.
Thank you. Representative Dimbro.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I'd just like to make the observation that there was a mention of parents wanting to send their kids to charter schools, but concerned about the expense. But those are public, free.
Absolutely.
They're at no charge. I'm wondering about the use of the scholarship to pay for supplementary educational opportunities. Representative Wingard, you mentioned Kaplan's, for example. I think, was it you that
Sylvan.
Mentioned?
Sylvan.
Or Sylvan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I'm just wondering, I will say I have a fundamental concern about public dollars going to religious education, but I can see that some people might use this credit to pay for sort of after-school religious education. You know, I myself was the beneficiary of private education that way when I was young, but, you know, my parents weren't able to, you know, claim a tax credit for that, and I think that's correct. And I'm wondering, as this bill is intended, would it allow that kind of thing to happen? Or, you know, I mean, is this taking us down, further down a path that perhaps we don't want to go?
I'm not exactly sure how to answer the very last question that you asked, but we specifically worded the bill to be open-ended on the definition of educational expenses. The only thing that's specifically prohibited is athletic fees, but we did that not necessarily to be permissive, but to just have the conversation start from an open place. And obviously, in any negotiation over the bill, we're open to whatever limitations need to be placed on it that provide comfort to the legislature that the tax credit is being used for education-related expenses that are deemed appropriate.
So just follow up. So would you be open to excluding religious education from being eligible for this credit?
So you're saying to prohibit people from being able to use the tax credit to offset tuition at what might be a religious affiliated school, like, say, Catholic school?
Correct.
I think that you severely limit people's tuition opportunities when you include that in there, and I'm not sure that you and I would agree on what the rationale would be for prohibiting that. I think that the argument that I would make is that if that's the choice that the family wants to make, it seems to be a perfectly legitimate choice, and we're not really giving them a credit that allows them to pay for it entirely. We're just giving them a credit that helps maybe make that more affordable for some families who are still going to have to contribute a great deal of their own money in order to make that happen. And I think that it's a win-win-win situation because they get the school opportunity for their child that they want. We have matched a child with the educational opportunity that works best for them as policymakers. And then at the same time, from just a straight revenue standpoint, if that child, by leaving the public education system, leaves more behind and increases the per student expenditure for those that are still in the public education system, then I believe the community wins as well. So other than perhaps an aversion to just the religious aspect of it, I don't understand why we would prohibit people from making that choice.
Right.
Thank you. Representative Springer.
Thank you. And Representative Winger, you began to answer the question, or maybe you did as far as we can today. As I look through the definitions, educational expense does not include fees or expenses for athletic activities, and that totally makes sense. I'm thinking of those other extracurricular activities, and I'm not talking Boy Scouts, and I'm not talking those kinds of activities. I'm talking about music. My son's school, small rural school, music is not offered.
Mm-hmm.
That is not an option.
Right.
And so we have gone down that road before. Are those the types of expenses that this would cover, or are we still, I'm hearing some negotiation, are we still in that phase?
Well, if the bill, Madam Chair, Representative Springer, if the bill passed in its current form, what would happen is the Department of Revenue would write the rules, and they would define what educational expense would mean. So as a legislative body, you all know we have two choices. We can either allow them to define it, or we can define, if we have concerns about how it might be defined or not defined, what would be defined in or out, then we could take the time to actually define, to lengthen that section of the bill and to be very specific about what we want to allow in and to prohibit. And as I said, we're completely open to that conversation. Rather than we're advancing the concept, and rather than my sitting down and trying to decide what's in, what's out, I would rather have the 60 members of this body deliberate that and bring all of their various expertise and experience to deciding that. And so I prefer to introduce the bill with that section open-ended and that definition left undefined for us to talk about.
Representative Maurer.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And this is actually, your question prompted me to ask, what are you really asking? And are you assuming that if a student leaves the school district, that funding, obviously the school district doesn't get that, the money, the $5,000 or $6,000. And so from a statewide perspective, that money then is spread out amongst all the students of the state of Oregon. So for every student that doesn't show up to public school, then it's increased by a penny. I don't know what, but it's a tiny, tiny amount. But if you're having this tax credit apply all over the state of Oregon, then a student leaving a public school in Portland is going to benefit me in Grants Pass. So I'm not quite sure that it's a negative, like a student leaving and transferring from, say, Grants Pass to Portland, because all we're doing is shifting the dollar.
I think what I was trying to get at, I'm trying to get my head around the numbers and the fiscal analysis, and I always try to get my head around the idea of how do you find what that answer is between the per student revenue versus the per student expenditure, because the dollars don't track with...
I thought this was off.
With the nice ring, though.
That they
don't necessarily track with the students. So the point of my question was trying to figure out who's really going to leave. How do we really calculate what the break even point is or the savings point is? I think more work needs to be done on those numbers to be able to figure out what that break even point is. And I think even the range there of between 5,600 and 41,000 would leave, and the break even number is somewhere between $90 and $730. I'm just trying to get my head around what does the fiscal aspect of this bill
right. Well, in Madam Chair, I would hope that in fact we would have revenue or fiscal, whoever's going to look at it. Is it revenue or fiscal?
Both.
Okay. Is have them assess it, because it's not that I don't trust your numbers, but it is, I mean, at least we're having the same people that evaluate all our stuff look at this, because I think that that this dynamic is not the same as taking a kid out of, you know, moving from Medford to Grants Pass. I think that it changes this dynamic, because now they're out of the system, but yet they're still in the state of Oregon.
Correct, but I think the impact would be different from district to district too. So a large growing district that has kids leaving versus a declining enrollment district and the impact that's there. And I think there's always the bigger question that comes up every time that the discussion about a tax credit or a voucher or any of those things come up is who is left and who is really advantaged and disadvantaged. It's a really complicated fiscal policy.
Madam Chair, let me just add that a lot of times a bill like this can be seen as an attack on the public school system, and I wouldn't bring it if I thought it was an attack on the public. I myself went through the public school system. I was born and raised in Loa, and went from, well, I was in Catholic school my first year, but they politely asked my mother to take me out. But from second grade through high school...
Can we quote you on
yeah.
that later?
mine was the soul they gave up on. second grade through high school, I did go through public school, and I enjoyed the experience. And frankly, it was later in life that I realized that experience had not been working for other people. I didn't notice, nor did I know as a teenager, what the dropout rate was in Oregon. And for how many people, the system that I was perfectly content with wasn't working. And I think it's important for us as a legislature to have the fiscal discussion. And the reason we brought it is because this isn't a work session, and I know the rules. You're not going to get a fiscal until you do a work session, so I wanted you to see some numbers. And we need to deal with that. And as I said, I'm happy to share with you what I believe is a win-win-win scenario from the fiscal standpoint. But I think it's important that we not lose sight of the overall policy issue, which is that if there's somebody in our system who doesn't want to be there, and this is the only K through 12 shot they're getting in life, if we don't get it right, if they don't get it right, it won't be a second chance. You don't get third grade over again. If they need to be somewhere else, and the only thing that's keeping them from being able to do that is a financial hurdle, how can we let that happen?
Thank you. I think if there aren't any further... Oh, Representative Thatcher hasn't gotten a chance
Thank yet. You. You were so intently listening to Representative Maurer. I just
Sorry.
No, but this kind of... I had a question that kind of related back to a question asked earlier by Representative Dembrough about private school, religious schools, and all that. And I wonder if any of you are familiar with the GI Bill that I believe utilizes federal funds. Do they limit those funds to only pay for training or education in secular schools?
I think Representative Thatcher, Chair Gill, so you're referring to the Pell Grant and the GI Bill, both of which offer essentially college scholarship or vouchers from the federal government, and they do not limit that. The federal government does not dictate or prohibit the use of those coupons, if you will, at a religious institution like, say, Notre Dame or, go Trojans, or some other institution. You are allowed to take those to either secular or non-secular institutions of higher learning.
And Representative Winger may correct me on this, but if I recall on the scholarship part of the credits, the scholarships go to the student, not to a school. Is that correct?
Correct.
So it's...
Right. The scholarship organization would grant that to the student. The student would simply, the family would simply notify them where they intended to use that scholarship.
Thank you for that clarification.
Great. Thank you all very much.
Okay, thank you.
Our next panel is Catherine Hickok and Manuel Castaneda. Welcome.
Thank you.
Would you please begin your testimony by stating your name for the record?
Thank you, Chair Gelser and members of the committee. My name is Catherine Hickok. I'm the director of the Children's Scholarship Fund Portland, and I'm here in support of HB 2754. This is our 10th year of operation, and for 10 years we have provided privately funded partial tuition K-12 scholarships to children from lower-income Oregon families. CSF Portland is a partner program of the National Children's Scholarship Fund, headquartered in New York. We're entirely funded by private donations through the generosity of local Oregon donors who, since our inception, have given nearly $1.4 million of their private funds and family foundation funds to help these lower-income Oregonians go to the schools that they and in their parents' and guardians' judgment is best for them. Our experience with the educational choices made by the lower-income families in our program demonstrates several key points relevant to this bill. First of all, lower-income parents want to take charge of their children's education. And when they are given a real choice in their options, they do that. They do their research. They're very passionate about choosing the setting that they feel is best for their children. I hear this all the time on the phone. The parents in our program value high-quality education as the key to escaping poverty, and they are willing to invest over half of the tuition dollars that they are charged themselves. So historically, our families are in the lower $30,000 range for their AGI, and they are paying well over $1,500 a child. Actually, the average tuition for the schools in our program right now is only about $3,700. So there are very low-cost options that these lower-income families are able to reach through a scholarship that is only about $1,500. We are only giving a small amount of money, which is making the difference between being able to afford it and not being able to afford it. The demand for broader educational opportunities in Oregon is real. When we began, we had over 6,000 applications for 550 slots, and I continue to receive calls all the time, particularly during this downturn. The last thing parents want to do right now when they're getting hit hard and they're telling you they're getting laid off is to yank their kids out of school, out of an environment where they know, where they're comfortable with their kids, where they have small class sizes. Some of the kids do have learning challenges, and they will tell us that in these private schools, despite the low cost, despite fewer resources than the public system, these kids are getting the help and attention they need, and some of them do have real disabilities and challenges. Third, it does not take a lot of money to change a child's life. As I said, our scholarships average about $1,500, and that's making the difference. So a tax credit of $1,000 really could truly make a concrete difference in these families, in where they send their kids to school. And if that's combined, their own tax credit, if that were combined with a scholarship program like ours, it's a private education is well within the reach of low-income families. I'm submitting with my written testimony the testimonies of over 24 of the kids and parents and some of their teachers in our program specifically to this type of legislation, and also attesting to what the choices they have already made, what they've been able to make through our program, how this has changed their life. And there are a number of kids with a lot of challenges in there also. So I'm happy to support this bill, which is named in honor of a notable Oregonian, Rose Friedman, the wife of Milton Friedman. She grew up in Portland, attended public schools, graduated from Lincoln High, and she and her husband Milton, as I'm sure you know, have been lifelong supporters of school choice, especially for the lowest income and most challenged kids among us. So thank you very much, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you have about our program.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for allowing me this opportunity. I just want to say that I'm not a lobbyist or a politician, so speaking in front of public is not my main...
Would you introduce yourself for the record so we all know your name?
My name is Manuel Castaneda, I live in Aloha area, previously Aloha, now Beaverton, I guess. And I wanted to participate in this because I have myself been through public school and ESL. My family moved into the state in 1979 with 12 kids and mom and dad, 14. So some of the programs that are there are obviously good programs, but at some point, as we move forward, we all, at least I wanted to, you know, change and become something else and just work in the fields. And I found out that one day I went to visit my kids, and I found out that one of my kids was in ESL program. And I said, but why? She doesn't even speak Spanish. She has a hard time communicating with my dad. So after I went to the office and talked to them and told them that there was probably a mistake, they told me that, no, they couldn't do anything about it unless I asked for permission from the migrant center in Beaverton to take her out of that. I said, why don't you give her math or science, something that she can use? She doesn't need to learn how to say table. She already knows that. I needed it, and it was good for me, but not for her. So I couldn't do anything. That was on Farmington Road there, on Hazeldale Elementary. After that, I talked to several other people to get help, and I couldn't get any help. Then, finally, we moved her to Cooper Mountain School, and we said, well, we'll start fresh there. When I went there 3 months later, she was back again in an ESL program. This time, I made an appointment with the principal. He was a very nice man, and he agreed with me that he knew Stephanie and that there has to be a mistake. And I said, that's why she was moved over here, because I couldn't get it out of there. He promised me that he would fix that, and the next day he would call me. He called me at work. I took the call thinking that she had fixed the problem. But no, he wanted me to come and have a meeting with him and the ESL teachers so they can explain to me how I should leave her there, that she wasn't learning how to say table or apple, that she could read a book there. But it was important for them, for her to be on the program, because there's more money for the kid. And I just told her I couldn't do that. I said, she's wasting her time there. She needs help in other areas. After that, I talked to several other people, some politicians too, to get help. I couldn't get anywhere. So I told my wife, I said, we have to do whatever we can to get our kids out of here, because we only have one shot at this. And we don't want our kids to do the same thing we've done. We want them to be now sitting in your chair or doing other things. So we'll never get beyond washing dishes or doing the normal landscape work. I'm a landscaper myself, but I want my kids to do other things. The response I got from the school person there, that I had to ask permission from the migrant intake center, I said, why? She has never moved. She was born here in Tuolumne Hospital. We have only moved maybe 10 blocks during the entire life of this kid. So I really urge you to give people like me the opportunity, or at least a little bit of help, so that we can work Saturdays and Sundays, and that little bit of help is going to be very helpful. Other people are in the same situation. So if you asked before, who would be leaving, will it be people like me? Because the people already have money, they already left, or they can leave at any moment. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Are there questions for this panel? Representative Harker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry I missed your name, but thanks so much for coming and testifying. Your name was?
Manuel.
Okay, thanks. Manuel, thank you for coming. We really need to hear stories like that and pay attention to them. I can only imagine the level of frustration you must have felt there. I would have been furious, and I'm sure you were too. So thanks for coming and telling us about it.
Thank you.
I'm going to redirect the second part of this.
Second part?
If I may. To Madam Hickok? Yes. I'm a strong proponent of public schools. I campaigned on improving the quality and funding level, which could be separable, of public education in this state. I'm really concerned about the possibility of this removing funds from public education, which I consider to be the foundation of a society that moves forward. What are your organization appears to be doing a great job making scholarships available to people who can't afford to send their kids to private schools.
Do you have any concerns at all about what appears to be, if I've read this correctly, the absence of a limit on income of people who can take this deduction?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Harker. I can't speak terribly well to the specifics, but I am not concerned at all about that. Our scholarship program is only for low to moderate income students. That's what I deal with, and our eligibility is basically the same as the federal free and reduced price lunch mm-hmm. program. So I am dealing primarily with lower income people, and many of them are on right on the edge between being able to afford a private education and not being able to afford it. So a little bit of help there in terms of a tax credit and or a scholarship helped out by a tax credit would definitely make a big difference to them.
Let me rephrase my question a little
bit.
Follow up. Thanks.
Welcome.
I've been fortunate enough to grow a business, and I would not qualify for that type of assistance. I would still be able to take a deduction if I were to give $1,000 to take $1,000 off my taxes in order to send my kid to a very high-priced school, correct? Maybe this is not for you to answer.
I would rather not comment on the specifics of the bill because I can speak specifically to our children's
sure.
scholarship.
Sorry,
plan, but
inappropriate
not the
perhaps
bill.
To ask you. I will ask
Thanks.
Others. Thank you.
Further questions for this panel? No, thank you both very
thank
much.
You.
Thank you.
Our next panel is Ed Osborne, Hugo Scholz, and former Senator Charles Starr.
Mm-hmm.
welcome to the House. And Senator Starr, I must say, I once had the opportunity to sit in front of your committee, so it's a pleasure to have you here today.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's an honor for me, Charles Starr, former senator from Hillsborough, Oregon, to address this august body today. I spent some happy years sitting on the dais where you are today. It's with a great deal of pleasure that I come here today to address you in support of House Bill 2754. I just can't emphasize enough how important, how really truly important this bill is to those parents, such as the previous testimony you heard, but considering the poor and those who have special needs in our system today and how poorly the public system provides or addresses their needs today, you must be aware that many of our students entering public school today fail to finish, and a much higher percentage of the poor and those who are have special needs are leaving the system because their needs are not being met, not being adequately addressed by our public system. It's a tragedy. And there are so many opportunities available today because of technology, because of those citizens who desire to provide special education for those who are not being addressed today in the public system. I sponsored legislation similar to this in 1995, and we got a hearing in the House. In fact, actually passed it in the House. Didn't get a hearing in the Senate. But this bill carefully identifies the folks who are eligible to receive the benefits of the tax credit and those who receive the benefits of the dollars that have been so invested, whether through individuals who have chosen to supplement their children's education or to fully educate them through homeschooling or private education. It also addresses the opportunity that most of these poor in particular are unable to help themselves. They do not have the dollars to help their children in a way that they would like. Given the benefit of tax credit funded vouchers, many families would move their children out of the public schools. And the fact that they do that actually reduces the cost of educating the children in the state of Oregon from our tax dollars. And I think the economist has fairly indicated what's likely to happen if this passes. But he did not indicate how important this is for those children that the public system is not meeting the needs of today. Sorry to say, we are losing these children in numbers way beyond the 40% that enter school and don't graduate. This is a much higher percentage loss to our public, to our future, than the overall numbers would indicate. So what I would like to do is to appeal to you that this is not a partisan issue. Those of you who support public education know that we're not getting the job done. If you don't know that, you haven't been listening. We have not improved public education, though we've doubled the actual dollar invested over the last 25 or 30 years. in actual real dollars, we've doubled the amount of money invested in education, and yet we have not improved. Part of that reason is that we don't address early on the reading skills necessary for these children who are most disadvantaged. We're not teaching phonemic awareness and phonics by direct instruction early and fast. And we demonstrated through Reading First Initiative and the work of the State Literacy Advisory Committee, the University of Oregon, and the federal tax dollars that were provided so that we could retrain teachers to teach phonemic awareness and phonics properly. The 31 schools that were in the first cohort in 2 years moved from the lowest quartile. 18 of them moved above the 75th quartile. And the other schools in that group moved from the lowest quartile above the 50th. We know that we can do better, but we're not doing it. These children deserve an opportunity to go where their parents deem most suitable for them, and this will be one way of helping out in that event. It definitely is a win for us all. Wherever tax credits are in force, it has not only improved the performance of the children that have taken advantage of it, but it's actually improved the performance in the public schools in the area. So it is a win-win for all. Please support this bill, and I would be happy to respond to any questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And before we move on, so for everyone that's planning to testify, if you could endeavor to keep your comments at this point to about 1 minute. We have over 20 people left that would like to testify and not quite a half hour to hear from all of you, and I'm hoping that we'll be able to get through the list. So please, go on. Yes, and if you'll start by stating your name for the record, that would be helpful.
Chair Gelzer and committee members, my name is Hugo Schultz. I live in Portland, Oregon, and I'm here today in support of HB 2754. Children in low-income families, many of whom are minorities, have diverse cultural educational needs. Children with disabilities have their own unique educational requirements. This act will provide them an opportunity to go to schools that best meet their special needs. Having met with Northeast Portland parents of limited means, I know that they will sacrifice anything, even taking a second job or two, to get their children into an environment that best fits their child's learning style. A $1,000 tax credit or a partial scholarship will help them realize the dream of seeing their children exceed their status. My wife and I have no children, yet have contributed to the Children's Scholarship Fund of Portland. And I know that you've already heard about they have a long waiting list in line, so there's a demand out there for this. Because this bill would move it from a tax deduction to a tax credit, we would be more, we could give more, afford to give more, and I believe there's a lot of other people that are also either childless or empty nesters that could do the same. We've already talked about the cost savings, the $1,000 tax credit given to a parent who transfers a child to a private school would mean at least $7,000 to $8,000 more for public education. Seems like this is a win-win bill. And we talk a lot about social justice and everything else. I think this is educational justice, that it's about time that they have come about. And I know you all respect diversity, care for children. Please show these children that you really care more for them than for lobbyists by recommending that this bill be moved out of committee to the House floor. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Osborne.
My name is Ed Osborne from here in Marion County. I've been involved in education from a public school graduate. I've been a bus driver through an administrator, and I really support this bill. I think that the people, the parents, need that right, whether religious or not, to have a say with their money, not the government's money. I think that we need to remember that, especially you as servants of the people. Finances are tight right now. I've talked to a lot of public school teachers that are saying that parents are having difficulties with maybe being involved with band, like you said, in music. They have to pay for instruments, so that could be used. This tax credit could be used for that. Field trips, there are other incidentals that could be covered by this for public school parents, but also for the private school area. Proposition 529 is another educational bill, I think, that's being pushed by Representative Courtney. And for college savings, same kind of idea. So he sees the need for helping parents keep their kids in school, getting a better education. So again, it's not a partisan type idea. So please remember that. I want to congratulate those that saw the need, saw the light for this bill and signed on to it, because it does affect most of the people in this state. And again, it's a bill I felt like was the most important of this hearing today to even hear. I was a little disappointed to not have ours heard first, because I'm paying for a parking meter out here, and we had to sit around and wait. So I was a little disappointed about that. Hopefully the ticket's not too bad. Scholarships.
$15.
Scholarship fund would be something I'd be looking really towards. My kids both graduated from private school or homeschooling. The largest white-collar worker group a few years ago, survey showed that the largest white-collar group that had their kids in private schools were public educators. So if you didn't know that, that's the case. So they know where it's at. Our last two presidents that had kids of school age have them in private school. And both of those are Democrats, so remember that. I'm sure you already know that. I kind of take offense to the discriminatory statements towards religious schools. Our country was founded on religious schools. Schools were started in churches, and it's very important for us to remember that. Our schools are going to implode. If public schools are going to implode, if something isn't done. I was talking to a couple of public school educators just Monday and yesterday here in Salem area. They say their schools are so packed, they need to have their kids sent somewhere else. Waldo Middle School. You go over there and you see their portables are just filling the parking lots. I think the buildings are built to hold about 700 students. There are over 1,100 students. Teachers are just trying to survive there. They're good friends, a lot of these teachers in public education, but it is very difficult to teach. A lot of the schools, I think, that are private schools...
Hey, Mr. Osborne, I'm going to ask you to summarize so we can give everyone a chance.
All right. I wanted to mention with the private schools, a lot of the schools are taking kids that are blind. I've seen kids that are retarded. They work with a lot of those. Parents know that those schools care. But a lot of these private schools are hurting right now because of the economy. So they need your help, and I'd like to encourage you to support this bill that would really help the whole state. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And colleagues, unless you have a burning question, I'm just going to go through the panels because there are so many. Carolyn Beyer, Meg Cutting, and Marissa Shanstrom. Welcome to the committee, and you can testify in whatever order you choose, and you probably noticed that the custom is to start your testimony with your name, so we know who you are.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. We're very happy to be here, and it's the first time that we've all testified, so we appreciate this opportunity. Who would like to begin?
Okay. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Meg Cutting, and I live in Kaiser. I am in seventh grade at Holy Family Academy. I think that parents who send their children to private school should receive a tax credit. Many say that public school is free, but we all pay taxes for this free education. Yet, those who choose to send their children to private school are paying for the education of children at public school, as well as for the education of their own children in a private school. This is not right. It is a kind of double taxing, yet an increasing number of people are seeking private school options. Why? There are many reasons. In a poll conducted in January of this year, respondents listed poor student discipline and school safety issues as major problems in our public schools. I know my own parents have simply sought a better education for my brother and myself. For example, I know that many of my public school acquaintances cannot write research papers or handle a presentation like this. Yet I was learning these skills before the fifth grade. In the poll I mentioned, 58% of those surveyed listed Oregon's public schools as poor or fair. Clearly, there is not much confidence in our schools among Oregonians. This poll also demonstrated that these thoughts are found not only in one or two political groups or select social or religious groups. No, Oregonians from all political, ethnic, and religious persuasions are seeking alternatives to public education. Yet again, those who would choose an alternative find it overwhelmingly costly. Consider that Oregon spends over $10,000 per child per year in the public school system. In researching this, I learned that more than $5 billion tax dollars are spent in educating school-aged children in Oregon public schools. That's a 5 with 9 zeros behind it. That's a lot of money. It all goes directly into the school system, not to parents or students. This eliminates any choice for those who would, if they could, choose to use some of that money to educate their children in an alternative setting. Isn't it ironic that in an age that practically worships choice, the parents have such little choice in the matter of education? Thank you for listening to this testimony and giving me the privilege to speak about this matter. I hope you will vote in favor of school choice for the benefit of all students.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee considering school choice, House Bill 2754. Thank you for this opportunity to speak to you. My name is Carolyn Dyer. I am a sixth grader student at Holy Family Academy in Brooks, Oregon. I live in Mount Angel, Oregon. America is often called the land of freedom. We need school choice to give all families the opportunity to choose a school that best fits the need of their children. My parents have chosen to provide me and all six of my brothers and sisters an education that cannot be attained in our local public school. In 1993, my parents, along with four other families, started an independent school that provides a Catholic classical education. One of the advantages of the school is the small teacher-to-student ratio, which gives students the attention needed to succeed. The teachers are able to work closely with the students to provide for individual needs. They can then spend the time to create a method to help all children learn. The most important aspects of this type of school is the Christian values taught throughout all the subjects and the Christian and wholesome family atmosphere that provides for a positive learning environment. Every day, we learn to treat all people as if we were encountering Christ himself. When schools try to take God out of their education programs, they cannot discover the splendor of God's creation and truth. Many of our textbooks are based on biblical principles and values. I'm here today because I believe that our great country was created by God, and that our school needs to provide for these basic Christian values within the classroom. It's time to put core Christian values back into the schools, and House Bill 2754, the Rose Friedman Education Opportunity Tax Credit Bill, is a good place to start. Thank you for your attention to my testimony.
Thank you very much. Girls, you both did a very good job.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and citizen legislators of the committee considering House Bill 2754. Thank you for this opportunity to address
you. And Ms. Sandstrom?
Yes.
Can you introduce yourself for the committee? And I'm going to suggest that you summarize, because we're running out of time and have so many people that are still signed up, and we want everyone to get at least a second.
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay. My name is Marisa Sandstrom, and I live in Silverton, Oregon. I'm a teacher at Holy Family Academy and have been a teacher at another private school, Marian Latin, in this area, as well as a private tutor for homeschooling families. I have taught at private schools in Massachusetts and in New Hampshire, as well as England and Taiwan. And I would like to speak about schools from a teacher's point of view. House Bill 2754 is a bill in the true spirit of American freedom, which facilitates education, excellence in education, by providing true equality of opportunity. Our nation has achieved worldwide preeminence in academics, research, and development of ideas as a result of creativity, innovation, and diversity of methodology. This flexibility has enabled wide-ranging experimentation, resulting in outstanding educational theories, practices, and institutions. Our capitalist system, despite its vulnerability, maximizes opportunity and choice for the citizen, from everything from products to religious practices. Enshrined in our Constitution, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness entails the ability to raise and educate children in the best way possible. Without prejudice to the public school system, private schools are able to tailor educational content and pedagogy in a myriad of ways to discover and perfect the process of personal development. The breakthroughs achieved and proven by pioneering educational institutions are of great benefit to the public school system and commonly serve as models which it can adopt and modify to improve itself. This process is of great value to society. The private schools in which I've taught have all offered pedagogy, methodology, and curricula that is not available in the public school systems. One was tailored to students who could not. One was tailored to students who could not function in the public school system due to learning disabilities, emotional or behavioral challenges, substance abuse problems, or language difficulties. These students were offered mini classes of 3 to 5 students where lagging students could catch up, make up for lost time, and complete their education to become positive, healthy, productive members of society. These were students who had failed and were out of the standard system. Other schools that I've taught at have become models of education, outstanding according to any standard, due to their ability to draw from the best pedagogical methods in history, their ability to combine spiritual, moral, intellectual development in a safe and wholesome environment, their ability to attract outstanding professionals with advanced credentials and deep personal commitment. I myself am a non-practicing attorney, and their ability to work closely with parents to adapt and coordinate education, the total education of each student. Many of these public private schools raise the bar and the standards throughout the nation and state as graduates are admitted at the most selective colleges. And here in Oregon, like the Pilgrim forefathers, faith-filled Oregonians seek religious, faith-centered education which celebrates God as the source of all that's good. And they refuse to compromise the moral formation of their children, which must be integrated with their intellectual and social development in order to produce healthy, whole individuals who can think, care, and contribute to society in every way possible. Holy Family Academy caters to lower income families, median income families with many children who sacrifice and work extremely hard to make the school possible for their children. And in contrast to the $10,000 per capita expense in Oregon on students, Holy Family Academy charges about $2,000, and the students are all at the top of the chart on standardized test scores. So there's much that these schools can do, and they should not receive negative prejudice, but should be supported as part of the variety of options available in this country of diversity.
These are just a few examples of how private schools can provide outstanding education, and Oregon should support this trend and provide economic equity for lower-income families, as well as incentive for business contributions to this all-important task of educating our children. Thank you very much for your consideration of our testimony.
Thank you all very much. And again, girls, thank you for coming, and congratulations on doing a great job your first time testifying before a legislative committee. I fear we're not going to get through everyone on the list. I want to make sure that if there are any, there's another committee that comes in right at 3 o'clock and we need to vacate the room for them. Are there other children that are signed up on the list to testify today? I want to make sure that any children that came that were planning to testify get a chance. Yes, so if you're a child and you're scheduled to testify, please come on up.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much. And I'm going to call. Would you like someone to come sit with you so you're not all by yourself? Is there a friend that would like to come and? Okay, you're doing great. You're doing fantastic. So if you sit down in the chair and just pull the microphone right up next to you, and tell us your name, and we are excited to hear what you have to say.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Anna Maria Cobb. I think school choice is important because my parents and I can choose the school we think is best and which we think has the best education. I think that it is good because we'll be happy with the school we have, and I think that my school is the best school we can find for me to go to. The parents do so much for the school. It is almost like they run the school. For example, every week one family has to work very hard to clean the school. I think that the parents make such a sacrifice to help the school. The parents work so hard to raise funds for the school. Our teachers don't get paid very well, but they put so much love into their teaching. The parents, teachers, and even the students work very hard to raise the funds. It would help so much if Oregon could give some tax credit to our parents who work so hard to be able to send us to Holy Family Academy.
Thank you very much. And how old? What grade are you in?
Second.
Second grade. You did an excellent job. An excellent job. Thank you very much. And you're very lucky to have parents that care so much about you. Are there any other children that were here that had signed up to speak? No more children? All right. The next on our list, we have Sandra Nelson, Russ Conklin, and Gary Sinceri. And we have to gavel out by 5 till 3. Welcome.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. I'm Sandra Nelson from Beaverton, and I'll try to talk really fast. I'd like to summarize as much as I can. I'm a teacher. I've been working these last couple of years, though, with a very caring and intelligent group of men and women in North Portland to start a private school for low-income, at-risk boys. We did our research, and we have the statistics that show the low test scores of many minority boys in most elementary schools in North Portland and the high incarceration rates of minority men in Multnomah County jails. The committee decided the best way to prevent this tragic personal and community loss was to work with these at-risk boys and their families while there was still hope, while the boys were young, providing them with academic, social, physical, and spiritual resources through deep commitment and relationships. The public schools cannot do this. No matter how much money they have or how fine the intentions, the public schools cannot provide the depth of personal care and spiritual foundation needed to overcome the tremendous challenges of most of our families. HB 2754 offers new hope to nearly everyone in our state. I'm not going to mention, there are a lot of groups that benefit I give the reasons how they'll benefit, but we don't have time to go into that, unfortunately, right now. So I'm going to go right to my last paragraph. Everyone wins with the passage of this bill, except incompetent teachers and the teachers' unions. They will lose power, control, and money. Leaders of the unions themselves admit that their goal is to protect the jobs of their teachers. Unfortunately, many teachers themselves suffer from their union's protectionism. They are forced to abide by rules that the union sets up that are not necessarily good for the children, and they are forced to pay dues for political activities that they may deem contrary to their own values. With their huge political war chest, the teacher unions are able to find and fund political candidates who will promote their political agenda. This is simply wrong in a state that prides itself in its freedom to choose. It's wrong because its injustice, cost, inefficiency, coercion, and oppression hurt families, students, good teachers, public schools, communities, businesses, taxpayers, and elected officials. We need this bill to begin to right that wrong. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Please.
My name is Russ Conklin. I serve the McKenzie River Christian School up in Springfield, Oregon. I came out of Minnesota, earned my master's degree plus in administration, educational administration. I have served for the past 27 years as a principal in Oregon, Washington, and in Minnesota. And I will make my comments very brief, too. I'm only going to speak to the kinds of students that we have in our small Christian school on the McKenzie River. And all of these students come from one of these four categories. We have gifted students in our school, 25% of them, one of whom scored at 1480 on the SAT scores this last spring. We also have special education students, 40% of our student body, ADHD, special ed students. One of the special ed students is with us because his mom found him sitting in a hallway in a public school, and she, from that point, brought him to us, and he's been with us ever since. The needs were just not met as per IEP. Most of our boys in my school were bullied out of public schools, didn't feel safe there. And then we have, in the last category, parents who are just concerned for the safety of their children, and I speak emotionally, spiritually, and physically. In today's Oregonian, I will point to it. This is one of the reasons why parents come to our schools. If you read this article, what's happening to young public school students, teenagers, eighth grade girls especially, with the alcohol problem in America, especially, you'll note, in Oregon, far higher than many other states. That's why parents send their students to these Christian schools, private schools, charter schools, whatever they can find to try to help their kids who feel lost in the system that is out there at this point. And remembering that these kids who just don't fit in the public school system are worthy of every opportunity for a good education as well. I thank you for the time you've given to us. I know it's been a long afternoon, but we do really appreciate your taking the time to listen to us. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Please.
My name is Gary Sanseri. I live in Multnomah County, and my wife and I also operate a home business in Multnomah County, providing curriculum mostly for homeschool families and some private schools and even some public schools. So even though we are finished homeschooling our own children, we are still in the homeschool circles, and we know the economic challenges that come with homeschooling, sacrifices that we made and sacrifices that families are still making. And it would be a great help for these homeschool families and private school families, those families that have made these choices, alternative education choices, to have some economic break. And also, we like the part of this bill that allows us to contribute to these places, these firms, these companies that will then take our donations and channel the funds to needy families that are economically challenged. We would really encourage you to consider and approve this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for this panel? No, thank you all very much. Thank you all for coming to share the afternoon with us. For those of you that had signed up to testify that we weren't able to get to, I apologize. If you want to send your written comments, we can get those distributed to everyone on the committee, and I can assure you that all of them will be read, as have many of you have written leading up to the hearing, and I thank you very much for that. And again, a special thank you to all of the children who came today. It's really wonderful to see kids, and all of you kids who testified did a very good job. So thank you all very much. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2754, and the House Committee on Education is adjourned.